Final hour, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly, broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We start off our final hour on this Thursday, as we always do, going to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, to speak with the voice of the Vanderbilt Commodores, Andrew Allegretta. Andrew, big game coming up this weekend. Thanks for calling in. Always excited to hear your insights.
What's going on, guys?
Not much. We're excited for this game. You know, college game day is in town. Vanderbilt's 5-0, and obviously with everything that went on around last year's game, with Vandy beating Alabama, number one Alabama at the time, it really feels like this is one of the biggest games in program history. Are you feeling the buzz around that building and around the fan base as you prepare for this game on Saturday?
Oh, for sure. I don't have perfect context on if it is the biggest game. It certainly feels like it's in the conversation. 2008 is a different context, but to have game day on campus and take on Auburn at the top 20 matchup certainly feels like that's in the mix and all of that sort of stuff. But yeah, for sure. I mean, I think I got some sort of email where I saw Nick Saban, I think, is going to be honored during the game for the Hall of Fame, the NFF Hall of Fame. So game day's there. Nick Saban's getting honored. You've got a top 20 matchup with college football playoff implications. You can tell that people are moving with a little bit more urgency. I just mean there's like more stuff happening, which I think is just kind of a natural rhythm when you've got game day and Kirk Herbstreit showed up on Tuesday to do some interviews with the guys. So yeah, there's been a pace, I think, to everything this week.
I think it's clear watching Vanderbilt that this team is more talented than it was last year when it beat Alabama here in Nashville. And that gap with a team like the Crimson Tide is a lot closer, especially in the trenches. But Andrew, correct me if I'm wrong. It feels like the game plan to win a game like this has to be the same as it was last year, of play ball control, try and shorten the game, low possession game, and then take advantage of those opportunities if Alabama gives you them for turnovers and big plays on defense and special teams.
I mean, I think Vanderbilt's strategy to win is kind of the same every single week. And I don't mean that to like breeze past the skill set that Alabama has. It's like this is their identity. They are a running football team. They are going to try to control time of possession, which they're good in both of those metrics so far this season. They've had a little bit more explosive, I think. You know, guys, I just 2 seconds, real fast.
No, it's fine. I love it. They have
calls.
Something to say too. You
know, yeah, I think they want to talk.
Yeah, like I've gotten into a rhythm of these interviews, and I'm super. I enjoy doing it thoroughly, and I've been able to figure out how my 9-month-old sort of operates, how to get her from point A to point B, and all of that sort of stuff. So I did one with SEC Radio this morning, and normally I can hold her, and she's pretty chill. She was chatty this morning. We brought up her desire to get after Ty Simpson with some blitz packages. She was really excited when we started talking about that. Obviously, time of possession fires her up as well. So, my 9-month-old is in the back.
Yeah, dealing with Drew on the radio is like dealing with Norm when you guys are calling the game. Like,
that's right. Locked in, focused. It's like a baseball player that's trying to do an interview afterward, and someone comes by in like the rally caps that are stacked up to the sky. Whatever. I do think Vanderbilt's strategy for success is kind of the same. I think what becomes interesting with this game is the thing that has been really helpful defensively is the ability to pressure the quarterback. They've been able to get after Drones or Sellers or Doty when he came off the bench or whoever. I think they're fourth in the Southeastern Conference in sacks so far with 14 of them. Well, you can dial up the pressure on Simpson, and that would be great because he's got no turnovers so far this season, and Vanderbilt, it feels like, needs to kind of change that to be able to find success back-to-back seasons versus Bama. But if you miss, man, they got guys that are going to torch you. So how they balance, like if you leave your corners, not to say Vandy can't cover, but if you leave your corners cover zero, like too much, that's a lot of explosives. So I think how they kind of dialed that in might be the one splash of difference from their strategy a year ago.
So if Vandy's able to go into Alabama and beat them, the number 10 ranked team, I would imagine they'll go from 16, 17 to, you know, top 10. How well equipped do you think this program is to handle the weekly pressures that come with that, right? Being the team that, hey, we got to go out and beat Vandy to make a statement.
I mean, you don't know until it happens, right? They've not been in the position of being the hunted versus the hunter. Someone else can put time context on that I can't. What I would say is Clark is very consistent with his message to the guys about what it takes on any given weekend to be victorious. He talks about the four opponents, and I'm not going to run down the entire list, but, you know, you're talking about the game itself, the opponent, you're talking about the environment, and you've got to be able to handle yourself in each one of those arenas to be successful. And some of that is the prep throughout the course of the week. Some of it is Diego's maturity throughout the past 12 months. I mean, he's still confident. He still is talking, and I think he's saying everything you would expect Diego to say, and nothing that is disorienting or out of the norm. I think, you know, as you continue to climb, you know, they're going to have to manage how many, you know, in our world, media requests they're willing to take and all of that sort of stuff. But that's probably a question for hopefully Saturday night, because we don't know just yet. And I will say, you know, for what it's worth, if Vandy loses the game, they're still in the college football playoff picture. Like, coming out of Saturday night, going into the bye, at worst, they're 5-1 and 1-1 in the Southeastern Conference. And you've got a lot of games that you can attack moving forward. But, you know, I know this team is not satisfied with simply being 5-1. And, you know, as much as Diego and Clark and others were kind of, I don't know if scoffed at is the right word or whatever, but when Diego talks about he didn't come back to go 7-6, I mean, these moments are what he's talking about.
So when you look at the receivers, Ryan Williams and obviously Jeremy Bernard, who is one of my favorite receivers in the country, how do you think, because you mentioned it, Cover Zero, how do you think the secondary can match up against those weapons?
Peter Burns asked me the same question, and I went all coach on him. And I'm probably going to do the same to you, TD. it's three levels of defense. It's can you find ways, to borrow Clark's term, to vice the pocket, to scrunch the pocket down on Ty Simpson with four rushers? How many blitzers do you have to bring? How well can you mix and match your coverages? To isolate it to just the secondary, I don't know. Obviously, you know, Williams, and you're right. Bernard has been kind of over Williams, the guy that's been the primary person. But the more that you can make them a one-dimensional offense, the more you can get Ty Simpson off his mark. Like, as much as we want to talk about the secondary, it's probably more about the defensive line and can they get pressure with Capers and Sidnor, and can you just get a quarterback that's been really comfortable so far this season? Goodness, he went 17-17 versus Louisiana Monroe. Competition aside, it's still 17-17. How can you make a comfortable quarterback uncomfortable? And then we can probably have a conversation about the secondary.
Andrew, last one for you here. Diego Pavia is firmly in the Heisman conversation right now with the way he's played through the first five games. And the one thing that's been clear to me, and I know you mentioned it on Saturday, is as good as he was last year, he has improved exponentially as a thrower of the football. The ball placement, the zip on his throws is noticeably better. How much more dangerous has that made this offense, and how can that allow them to compete with some of these top teams in the SEC if he's able to be a consistent thrower from the pocket for this team?
I mean, it just makes you multidimensional, right? And it makes defenses guard Vanderbilt in new ways. I do think Tim Beck has just been masterful as the offensive coordinator, dialing up all sorts of different looks, all sorts of different players. Like, you go up and down the explosive plays that Vanderbilt has made this season, and it's not just Tavia rushing for 50 yards or Cedric Alexander rushing for 50 yards. She's fired up, man.
She's ready for the
game. It's a big game this weekend, man.
Goodness gracious. Like, I'll let her call the game if she's got this sort of pop. Holy cow. You know, you go up and down. Like, Richie Hoskins has a 53-yard touchdown reception. Bryson Coleman has a 54-yard touchdown reception. You know, Pavia is firing it into windows. Yeah, I know that one. That's right, Drew. He's firing it into windows. and it's been impressive to watch. It just means that they're multiple. It just means that Tim Beck can dial up more things. And the more he can dial up, the more off-balance defenses are going to be, the more explosive they can get, the more they can control all of this sort of stuff. So I've been really impressed. It's 75-ish% completion so far for Diego Pavia, which is 15 percentage points higher than his career average. Like, he's playing, whether NFL scouts think he's an NFL quarterback or not, he's playing an NFL IQ brand of football at the moment. We'll see how Bama challenges him on Saturday.
Andrew, as always, appreciate you taking some time. We'll let you get back to daddy duty and excited to listen in on Saturday.
Yeah. If you hear Drew in the background on Saturday, you know something went deeply, deeply wrong with child care.
Yes, we'll have to listen in if Drew is drowning out Norm on Saturday.
Great. Yeah, all right. Well, Drew, Norm would probably concede his headset.
That's true.
Drew, knowing Norm.
That is a good point.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, Andrew. Appreciate it.
I have a daughter named Drew also. I should have asked him how he spells it.
I think it's normal spelling.
Oh, D-R-E-W.
Yeah.
Hers is D-R-U.
At least I'm pretty sure about that. Gotcha. Andrew Allegretta, voice of Vanderbilt football, appreciate him joining us, previewing a massive game on Saturday. Number 16, Vanderbilt, traveling to Tuscaloosa to take on number 10, Alabama College. Game day in town. Vandy a chance to start 6-0, clinch bowl eligibility on the first weekend in October. You can listen in to all the coverage starting at 1 o'clock on 94.9 The Fan with kickoff set for 2:30. We will take a quick break. We will react to what Andrew had to say. Preview that Vandy-Alabama game a little bit further on the other side. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly, next man up here on 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly with you on this Thursday. About 45 minutes left in the show. We'll get back into the Titans in just a second, but appreciate Andrew Allegretta joining us for his weekly visit to preview Vanderbilt and Alabama. Again, that is a 2:30 kick. You can listen on 94.9 The Fan with pregame starting at 1 o'clock. Vanderbilt, there's still a narrative around this team of, you know, the same old Vanderbilt, and a lot of people are picking Alabama just because of, oh, it's Alabama, Vanderbilt, they're going to win and show us who Vandy really is. But if you've been watching this Vandy team, this is a different Vanderbilt team than what we've seen in the past. I'm not saying that they're going to win on Saturday, but anyone expecting that this isn't going to be a game late into the third, fourth quarter, clearly hasn't been watching what Vanderbilt's been doing this year.
Yeah, this is a different team, man. Like, this team has juice, and it's just so amazing what, you know, having just a guy that could be a catalyst. Like, Diego Pava, they can't pay him enough money.
Yeah.
He's
breathe. $2 million or whatever that came out that he's getting paid is
double it to four.
It's a bargain.
He's breathed so much energy into this program. It is unbelievable how, because I remember getting here in 2018 and walking over there to the campus, and I'm like, okay, this is where the misery takes place. You know what I mean? But now it's like, I want to go see them play. You know what I mean? And it's where you're seeing more than just the students there at games. Like, people want to go see Vandy play, and not because they're playing in LSU or Georgia, whoever. You know what I mean? They want to go see them because they want to see Vandy.
Yeah.
They want to see Pavia.
Right. The turnaround from 2-10 2 years ago, Khalif Raymond's on Good Morning Football right now. Yeah. The turnaround from 2-10 2 years ago to where they are now, this is the week where, you know, last year beating Alabama put them back on the map of like, oh, maybe Vandy's got something here. This is the one to solidify it. Like, you win this game, you are right in the thick driver's seat in the playoff race, and I think Diego Pavia becomes the Heisman favorite if they win this game. Depends on how he plays, obviously. But I think Diego Pavia becomes your Heisman favorite if they win this game on Saturday at Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, with the Oklahoma quarterback, John Mateer being hurt.
Dante Moore would be up there too, the Oregon guy. But
no, man, he's a baller.
And that was he made some plays in that Penn State game down the stretch. But he's a baller. If Pavia on national TV goes in and beats Alabama for the second year in a row, I don't know how you don't put him right at the front of the conversation to go to New York.
He's got to be in the mix, man. You smile because you think about that, like a Vanderbilt player being a Heisman candidate.
Right.
But it's legit.
Not even winning it with – obviously, the goal is to win the Heisman Trophy. The goal is to go to playoff. But, like, if Diego Pavia is sitting in one of those chairs in New York in December, like, crazy. What can happen in 2 years? And Diego Pavia has been – I mean, there's a lot of people. Just as we were saying, you can't blame everybody for the Titan struggles. There's a lot of people who have been involved with Vanderbilt's resurgence. Clark Lee, Jerry Kill, Tim Beck. But Diego Pavia has to get a large portion of that, not blame, but credit for what Vandy's been able to do the last couple of years.
No, without a doubt, man.
Let's go back to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Our friend Clay has called in. Clay, good morning. Go ahead.
Jake, how you doing?
Doing well.
I wanted to, you know, I've talked about this a little bit already about the game, but I kind of wanted to talk about something else around the game, and that's the one difference I see in Diego's play this year and last year. If you look at last year, Jay, you know, everything – I'm talking mainly about his passing. His running is what it is, and he's pretty good at that too. But passing the football, a lot of times his most successful passing plays would be when something breaks down, you know, the pocket kind of crushes and he escapes. This year, the difference I see in the way this kid is playing – he's become a better pocket passer, in my opinion. He's got a better offensive line. They're protecting him better. And I've seen plays that he makes from the pocket. And this guy is completing what I think close to 75% of his passes.
Yep.
And so he's delivering the football accurately. And now he's doing it more from the pocket. That's one difference that I see.
Clay, thanks for the call. And that's a great point. I was talking to Andrew about that. Of just you can see the difference in the explosiveness out of his hand on these passes. Mm-hmm. And go watch that game against Utah State on Saturday. The second and third touchdowns to Junior Sherrill in the first half are just tight window back shoulder throws like that. That's something that I don't think he did consistently last year. He could throw the football, and he made the right decisions, but he wasn't able to kind of push the ball downfield and make plays exclusively with his arm. He's been doing that this year, and that makes this offense a whole lot more versatile.
Yeah, and you got to like that, just being able to take your game to another level and finding ways to do that after being the guy that, you know, he was the man. He could have sat on it last year and just been like, hey, man, look, like I've arrived, but no, he found ways to get better.
Yeah, and he has been great. You look, 13 passing touchdowns, a couple rushing touchdowns. He's got 300 yards on the ground, over 1,000 through the air. He has been a special player so far this year. I saw On3 just named him the best player of September across college football, and this is a huge test. I mean, this is what you play for is games like this on Saturday. You've got a national audience. You've got College Game Day in town. I mean, Andrew saying Kirk Herbstreit lives in Nashville, so he came through and did some interviews this week. Like that, this is what you sign up for when you play SEC football. And Vandy, for a while there, wasn't really included in all of that.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to always go back to it, but Paul Feinbaum's comments in the Netflix documentary of like calling Vandy the doormat of the SEC was an insult to doormats. Like that is what the That's what the vibe was around this program for a long time. And Clark Lee has completely flipped that. Diego Pavia has completely flipped that to, I mean, do you think anybody in that Alabama locker room feels secure heading into Saturday?
They better not.
Because last year they did, and we saw what happened.
Goalposts in the river.
And that's the difference is you've gone from being the team that you know, the Titans right now feel like they're everybody's get-right game. That's kind of where Vandy was at a while. It was like, oh, team needs to get right. They played Vandy. That's not the case anymore. And Vandy, a win on Saturday, just like you talked about with Andrew, is they stop being the hunter. They become the hunted because they're going to be a top 10 team in the country.
Yeah, and just imagine that. Top 10 team, Vanderbilt University football. That's just – it's crazy to mention that together, but that's where we are, and Heisman candidate. So I think when you look at this, if – obviously, you don't put the cart before the horse. They got to
go out and win the game on Saturday, yeah.
But if they are able to win this game, as I believe they will, this is a major, major step forward for the organization. And it's cool to see them having taken so many steps – and now to take another one that's even bigger than the ones they did before is
right. You know, they've marched all the way up to the gates, and it's like they got to break it down now. This is the moment where Vandy can go from being a cool story to being an actual college foot. Not, I mean, they're a playoff contender whether they win or lose. Like, they still have the games in front of them to get to the playoffs even if they lose. But you win this game, you go from Cinderella story to, oh man, this team, all they got to do is win a couple more games and they're in. Like, or they're playing at Tennessee to get in to the playoff at the end of November. It's been a special ride through the first couple of weeks of the season, back to last year. Big game on Saturday. And again, that is a 2:30 kick. You can listen on 94.9 The Fan. Pre-game coverage starts at 1 with Andrew, Kevin, Norm, and the whole crew. We will get back into the Titans coming up next with TD. Looking ahead to Sunday's game against Arizona. The Titans have lost 10 straight games, and we're just going through, you know, there haven't been a whole lot of 10-game losing streaks in Titans history. There's been a few, but it's hard to lose 10 straight games in the NFL. Titans trying to make sure it doesn't get to 11. How can they get that done, and how important is it to finally get one win this season to just get some vibes going in the locker room and avoid maybe this team starting to give up? We'll talk about it coming up next. We'll get to your phones. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly, next man up here on 102.5 The Game.
He had a return for a touchdown last week. Khalif Raymond.
Oh, yeah. Great weather report. I mean, on Fox 17, meteorologist Brett Luna. It's nice and calm. Weather is going to stick around with us through the weekend. We'll be mostly sunny and dry with highs in the mid or upper 80s each day.
Because you finally start to bring in a nice guy to have right now.
But again,
that was Cam Ward yesterday talking about getting Tajay Spears back from injury after he suffered that high ankle sprain in the first preseason game against Tampa. His practice window is open. It's 21 days, but a chance that he is back out on the field on Sunday when the Titans take on the Cardinals. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. We touched on a little bit earlier, TD, that Tajay Spears coming back. Not saying this is going to be a spark that gets the offense scoring 30 points a game, but could be an important addition in the screen game like we talked about. But also, like, Tony Pollard, he's had his moments. He's had a couple of really good runs. He's still averaging less than 4 yards a carry. Taking some off of Tony Pollard's plate and having Tajay Spears to take some of those carries could be important for the running game as a whole.
This team desperately needs explosive plays, and that's something that Tajay Spears is going to bring to you. So I think that's a good thing. You talk about the screen game. I mean, remember the Jacksonville game last year, the season finale. Like, he caught that screen, and he scooted down, I think it was inside the 5-yard line, no red zone regardless.
Right.
So you definitely want to have a guy like that back. He brings a jolt of energy and excitement on the football field, but even in the locker room. You know, he's a guy that's upbeat. He's one that just – you need those good vibes, that good energy, right? You need that, especially in a time like now. And the thing that's really good about this is, yeah, he's a part of the team that lost the 4 games, but you're getting a fresh –
right
degree of freshness.
Yes.
Yeah, he wasn't on the field. You know what I mean? And so there's a different hunger. I don't want to say different hunger, but there's a freshness to him that could give that team some juice if he is activated. Because I will be honest, watching him move around yesterday, you could tell, And there's a video on Threads. Yeah, I got plugged Threads. I have a video on Threads actually that shows him going through practice and you know, the individual period, and you could tell, like, okay, there's still a little hiccup. It's not the same as it was before.
Yeah, not sure that he's going to be active on Sunday, but getting closer for sure as they open that window. You would hope maybe the Vegas game at the latest, maybe the Patriots game, but we'll see. I think that's the one hope you have for this offense starting to figure things out, is getting guys back from injury. Mm-hmm. And Spears is obviously a big piece. Latham would be the biggest piece. And yeah. Brian Callahan said yesterday as he was walking out of the press conference that he's close. Mm-hmm. And they feel like he's going to be back soon. He didn't practice yesterday. But getting him back and having that five on the offensive line that you planned on all offseason, that could be a big spark to get this team back on track offensively.
Yeah, and I think it's more just a feel of, and not even a feel, but a guess of, okay, I understand he's healthy, but what are the chances of re-injuring
right,
it? And that's one of the things that, yeah. That's
he's going to go on IR if he re-aggravates it again.
Right, right. And then that's one of the things they're afraid of is rushing him back and having to be a little more long term. Obviously, it's been long, right?
Yeah,
we're talking about three games now. Well, including
this
three
and a half games. Four. Yeah.
I want to say this also, because everybody's just like, "Hey, put him on IR, put him on IR, put Kevin Winston on IR." Look, guys, don't, like, Mr. Miyagi isn't waiting in the IR room to put his hands together and, you know, rub them and put them on these players and heal them instantly.
Yeah.
Just because you're on IR doesn't mean you're going to heal any quicker. And it's not like there's an abundance of players out there to flow into a roster spot while he's gone. You know what I mean? So I wanted to say that. But I think when you look at this, they're being cautious. It's a young player. It's a cornerstone player. You got to make sure that he is right before you get him out there.
Yes, and maybe not a good sign that the Titans claimed Brent Banks off of waivers this past week of, like, you know, if you felt like you were going to get Latham back, maybe you don't have to go claim a tackle.
Yeah.
But maybe that's another guy who starts to factor in that swing tackle conversation.
Well, I mean, if you ask Kevin Zeitler, Ali Udoh played really well.
Yeah. And I honestly, the sack totals have gone down in every single game.
Yeah.
To be fair.
And, you know, quietly, and it's not always on the offensive line either. You, you know, and Cam Ward will admit that. Some of the receivers, they need to admit that too. Like, hey, we got to do a better job getting open for Cam so he doesn't have to hold the ball, so he doesn't get tackled and it gets put on the offensive line.
Yeah.
You know, but nevertheless, I think when you look at, as you mentioned, how things have gotten better, you're right.
6'5", 4'2", that's the sack numbers.
The numbers have gone down.
Yep.
You know what I mean? But it's just like, whew. I know the sack numbers are going down, but there's still a lot of pressures.
Right.
You know, and so to me, that goes back to where we were in the start of this program in talking about the RPOs and talking about moving the pocket and rolling Cam out. You know, when you go against a team, well, last week was a bad example because both guys are good. But, you know, if anything, I would roll away from Dan Moore and or roll away from Ali Udoh to Dan Moore's side.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's things that they could do and incorporate into the offense that they need to incorporate. But then at the same time, we never know. Like, is that the play call and Cam shifts it to something else?
Right.
You know, there's so many things. And that's why I'll be critical. Don't get it wrong. But I'm never going to be hey, they're dumb.
Yeah,
they don't know what they're
You
doing.
Don't know what their assignment was on any play.
You don't know.
And that's part of it, is like, you can look and say, man, that guy really messed up, but you don't know what he was being asked to do on that play, which makes it tough looking from the outside. Let's go back to our phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Edward has been waiting patiently. Edward, thanks for calling. Good morning. Go ahead. Edward, you there?
Come on, Edward.
All right, no Edward. Thanks for calling. If you want to call back, we'd be happy to hear from you. Also noticed on the injury report yesterday, Calvin Ridley didn't practice. Mm-hmm. And I know Brian Callahan said that he was kind of fighting through some things on Sunday. Do you think maybe a week off could be helpful for Calvin Ridley, just to maybe reset the brain, reset the body, and get him back healthy heading into the Raiders game? Or do you think he'll be out there on Sunday?
I think he'll be out there. A week off couldn't hurt. But, I mean, for me, with Calvin Ridley, I think he needs to get as many shots at it as possible.
Yeah.
To me, and just in talking to him, he's a guy that has to do stuff. Like, you can't – he's not someone you want sitting idle. You want him to get involved. And I'm not saying if he sits idle, he'll get in trouble. I'm not saying that. But I think if he sits idle, he has an opportunity to get too much into his own head.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? But being able to flush it and go back out the next week, I think is ideal for him.
Yeah, and this is an important week. Every week's important for the Titans to just – we said it all show long. Just get a win. You need a win because – you know, you'd like to think that these guys, you know, they're getting paid a lot of money. This is their job. They're all playing for themselves, too. But it can be easy if you get to 0-5, 0-6, 0-7, and you haven't won a game in almost a year for these guys to maybe start to check out a little bit.
Yeah.
And you don't want to lose the locker room like that, which, you know, you run the risk of the longer it takes you to get that one win, to just get that monkey off their back and maybe start to play a little bit more free.
And the thing is, the more you continue to lose, the more you're going to get away from, oh, it's close. Like, in talking to, like, Kevin Zeitler, Jeffrey Simmons, Peter Skoronski, like, these guys are like, hey, man, like, we are so close.
Right.
You know what I mean? And the more you get away from that, the less confidence you're going to play with. And I think when you look at, you know, just how desperate this team is for a win, like, man, you could really see it. And I remember yesterday asking Peter Skoronski about that, and just the look on his face, it told you everything when you look at just how desperate he was for the win. Because I was like, you know, if you could break the ice, you know, what's it going to be like? And as I said earlier, I think it's huge just to feel it, he said, and knowing what it feels like, giving that little confidence boost going forward. And he said it speaks for itself. We felt the lows for so long. So to put one in the win column would be big.
Yes, and – chances to do that. Like, nobody that they're playing over the next couple weeks are Super Bowl contenders. Like, you got the Cardinals, you got the Raiders, you got the Patriots. And I know the Patriots game is going to have a microscope on it because of the Vrabel of it all. But, like, none of those teams are Super Bowl contenders. You can't go 0-3. Like, you got to go win a game, and that could start this week against the Cardinals on Sunday. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. We've got Edward back. Edward, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Okay, guys, can you hear me all right?
Yep, we got you.
All right. I have a lot of respect for both of you guys and your opinions. So I appreciate what you're doing, the studying of it and analyzing it. A couple of comments. One, Americans are very impatient.
Hmm.
Okay? They want their food fast. They want they don't want to stand in line. They want everything instant. I know this is a hypothetical, and you might not answer it, but I'm going to ask it anyway. If we still had, and I know, here we go again, we still had Evan Byron, all he's washed up, and didn't he just win the Chicago Bears football game for him Sunday?
Just won again. AJ Brown,
Derrick Henry. There's one show on here that asset management. Let's get rid of Jeffrey Simmons. He's convinced we've got to get rid of Jeffrey Simmons now. Leonard Hopkins, Julio Jones. Terrence, do you think we would be 0-4? What about, let's throw in there John Robinson and Mike Vrabel. Ownership. That's what the problem is. Ownership. Okay? And I'd just like to hear y'all say, if we had all those players, where would we still be 0-4 right now?
Yeah.
I had thousands of people in my career. I never got rid of my good people. I played it out. Anyway, I'd like to hear what you have to say about that.
I mean, so, yes, for sure. If you still had Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown, I think you definitely wouldn't be 0-4 at this point.
Yeah.
There was a – for some reason – this team wanted to tear it down really fast. And it started with the A.J. Brown – and I think that 7-game losing streak in 2022.
That was the backbreaker.
Right. Like, you were still 7-3 without A.J. Brown at that point. And you felt like you still had the pieces to go make a run. But that 7-game losing streak, and you lose to the Jags in that win and in game, I think at that point, there was just an over excitement to, like, hey, let's just tear it all down.
Yeah. Hit the ceiling.
Right. And who knows? Maybe if they had just tried to build around Derrick Henry again. I don't know. How many more years did Ryan Tannehill have left? I mean, he hasn't played since he left the Titans, and injuries were piling up. I don't know. But I think that's a big reason, is that that seven-game losing streak, I think the Titans hit the panic button after that and have never been able to get it back.
Yeah, you're right. But you're talking about play calling, putting a guy in great position. Tannehill was like at an all-time level when you talk about yards per completion on play action and completion percentage. Like, we're talking about Steve Young and I think like Fran Tarkenton.
Yeah, I mean,
those were the other two names.
2019, 2020, 2021. Ryan Tannehill is the best quarterback play that this city had seen since Steve McNair.
Yeah, and so a lot of that was play calling. You know you got a guy who will run through the catch and get you yards after the catch.
Yep.
You know you got a running back that's going to dictate all types of attention. And you know you got a quarterback that will pull the trigger and fire that thing in there and hit him in stride. So you call the play. Like, they called that same play action strike route. They called that a good
times.
6 to 7 times a game.
Yep. I mean, the play call to Khalif Raymond in the playoff game against the Ravens.
On the post,
It was that's the same call as that 2019 season, the like 95-yard touchdown to A.J. Brown. It was just play action post, and they hit that consistently.
Oh, you're talking about the Raiders game?
Yeah, the Raiders game. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where he jumped and stuck the landing
and then
smiled. Just he was cheesing that.
Off
that
to
was
the races.
Funny,
and, you know, Arthur Smith. You wonder how much of a factor that was, losing him after those two great seasons. Now, 2021, you went to the AFC, or you were the number one seed in the AFC with Todd Downing, but you could argue Todd Downing was, they did it despite Todd Downing, not it because of Todd Downing.
Well, let me ask you this. You talk about guys who have been head coaches
before. I was about
to
say that. Arthur Smith. I would not hate it. I really wouldn't.
I wouldn't hate it at all.
I think that is a hire that, yes, it didn't work out in Atlanta. But this is a guy who, he was in your building for a long time.
He knows the culture.
He knows the culture. He knows the city. He knows the ownership. And he's proven that he can be a good play caller in this league.
Yeah.
I think that is a hire that we haven't talked about enough.
Somebody put talking about A.J. Brown makes me sick.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned the seven-game losing streak, but, like, if you really want to point to the moment this thing fell apart, it was when Mike Vrabel stood up from the table and walked away after they announced the
you
A.J. Brown
trade. You
could see the pain. That was,
he told me. He said that gutted me.
Yeah,
he
I mean,
it gutted me.
It was like 2 months earlier where he said, as long as I'm the head coach, we're not trading A.J. Brown.
I'll tell you, man, look, I put the headset down and walked away. I couldn't do the rest of the show. I was done.
Yeah.
I was done. It was atrocious.
I was that night, I'm a Phoenix Suns fan, and they were playing in the playoffs in it was a game 6, I think. And so I had the dual screen set up. And so at that point the game was wrapping up and I was locked in on that instead of the draft. And I started getting texts of like, "Oh my God, Jake, I'm so sorry." And I was like, "What happened?" And then I looked over to the other TV and I saw the trade details and ruined my night. Ruined my night. 615-737-1025. Sorry to depress everybody out there for a couple of minutes. We've got one more segment left on this Thursday. We'll wrap things up. Maybe talk a little Thursday night football. 49ers-Rams tonight. If you have any thoughts, last call for phone. 615-737-1025. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly. Next man up. 1025 The Game.
Okay.
There we go. Way to finish it up, Parker. It's a good one to wrap up the show on.
Teddy.
Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly. Chasing Big Joe coming up after us. Tomorrow, I'll be joined by Connor Newt for the full show. And also, Max Herz is going to join us from 9 to 9:30 to preview the Predators season, which gets underway 1 week from today. You can listen to all Preds games right here on 102.5 The Game. The plan is moving forward to have Max every week. So if you're looking for some hockey talk, we will have that for you on Fridays every week. Looking forward to it. Couple minutes left in the show here, TD. Did want to mention this text. We were talking about Arthur Smith as a name that could get, you know, knocked around if the Titans make a coaching change. Trevor mentions Jim Schwartz as another guy. I'm not not as on board with that. Just I think you might want to go offensive minded guy again. But in terms of a guy who, yes, familiar with what it takes to have success in this city and with this organization, Jim Schwartz, obviously a guy who's been here and done that before.
Jim Schwartz with Mike McDaniel as the OC.
There you go.
I think if you went that route of Jim Schwartz, you definitely have to have a legit established OC.
Yeah.
And quarterback coach, because you know what will happen. You get to be the victim of your own success.
You get
a good
offense. You keep losing your play caller.
Yeah.
And that's what the Titans had with LaFleur and with Smith, of just like, hey, we can't keep it consistent for Marcus Mariota or Ryan Tannehill or whoever was the quarterback at that point. Let's go back to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Wes from Hermitage has called in. Wes, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Guys, it's a beautiful Thursday. Jake, I'm the next man up again. I feel good about it.
You are. You are the next man up.
Well, I got a new nickname for Amy Adams Strunk today, and I got a couple questions for TD. TD, I know you know a lot about the Tennessee Titans. Am I correct in saying that your favorite team in the NFL is the Eagles?
If I had to pick a team, it would be the Eagles. I love A.J. Brown, and, you know, Philly is hometown, so, yeah.
I don't really have
a favorite, honestly, though.
Okay. Would you say that you know just as much about the Eagles organization as you do the Titans, or no?
Overall, I would say just as much, but being here and having the relationships, I would say more about the Titans as far as like the inner circle, inner working.
Well, that being said, if Amy Always Stunk told you that she needed you to come be the GM and make the Titans the Eagles, and she told you that you had 2 years to come up with a winning record, what are the first 3 to 5 things that you would do? Now, if she said in those 2 years, if you have a winning record, she'll give you a $50 million bonus.
Ooh.
So it's serious. It's serious, man.
It's
what
serious.
What are the first 3 to 5 things that you're doing to make the Tennessee Titans the Philadelphia Eagles? Because they don't have a clue.
Yeah, the first thing I would do, honestly, is I would get myself a dominant wide receiver. That's the first. Well, no, let's keep it 100. First thing I'm doing is going out, and I say receiver first because it's really hard to do. But first thing I will work to do is go out and find myself a legit tackle, right?
That idea.
I will find that first, and then after that, I'm going for a dominant pass rusher. And then from there, I'm going for a receiver. I have to address the trenches and impact the trenches first.
So do you agree with any of the decisions that the Titans made this offseason to, quote-unquote, build this team up this year?
I think the Zeitler signing was good. I understand the Dan Moore Jr. one. I can't say I agree with it, but I also can't say, well, what else would you have done, right? Unfortunately, because of injuries, you're right back in the situation where you got one – serviceable bookend of the bookends, you know, but I can't say I agree with all of them.
I appreciate it, man. I was just curious because I think you kind of have a better idea of how to put a winning team together than what we got going on right now.
And listen, it's easy to sit here in this chair without you know the pressure,
right?
And make those decisions, say do this and do that. I don't envy the job that Chad Brinker and Mike Borgonzi have.
But you would take that pressure for that paycheck, though, right?
Diggity darn right. Let's
right.
do it.
Thanks for the call, Wes.
I love it.
That'll about wrap things up for us here on this Thursday. TD, as always, appreciate you coming in. We'll do it again next week.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate it, man. Great calls today from everybody.
Yes. Appreciate all the interaction on the text line, on the phone line. Tomorrow we'll have some Preds talk with Max Herz and get you ready for another big weekend of football. For Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly, I'm Jake Lyman. Chasing Big Joe coming up next here on 102.5 The Game.